Hey, we're joined now in the studio by the mayor of Carrboro, Lydia Lavelle. How are you?
Good, Aaron. It's good to see you.
And I got a big week. It's been kind of a busy week this week, what with a thousand different things in the news. But next week's going to be really busy as well because Natchez coming to town, which is the North American Travel Journalists Association, for what should be a really kind of a small conference, but it kind of packs a really big punch in terms of how important it is to the community.
Exactly. That's a great way to describe it. We started courting this group, gosh, about a year ago. And the Visitors Bureau actually brought representatives from this group, their executive director and so on, to our community to tell them they needed to bring that group here this year to tell our story. And in particular, I think they were really, they don't go places that are kind of well-known necessarily, you know, like the big cities and so on. They look for places that might have unique stories to tell. And I think in particular, HB2 both scared them and intrigued them that we were so anti-HB2. And,
right.
And so we really did a lot of kind of wooing and discussion with them to tell them why our community here, the Orange County community, was so unique. I think on at least two occasions I met with the representatives from there. I think it'll be a great opportunity to showcase our local businesses, showcase our community values, and then what we're hoping, of course, the payoff is that these journalists that come, and I think they tell me they usually have anywhere from 80 to 100. I haven't looked at the total number yet.
I heard 80, yeah.
Okay. That, that you know, then they in turn will write stories, intriguing stories, interesting stories of our area that will then go out to their constituents, and then that'll bring more tourism to our businesses.
We were talking with Marlene Barbera from the Visitors Bureau earlier this week of just all of the different things that she's trying to do to cram in just opportunities to see Chapel Hill and Carrboro and Hillsboro and Orange County Farms and get a bike tour and sample all the local breweries and taste as many restaurants. About there's a lot of different things that we can showcase to people coming in.
Right. I want to go. I want to attend.
Right? Yeah. I want this tasting tour that these people are going on.
Well, there's something about every day and every night that they're doing. I know one of the opening kind of grand event of the evening of Tuesday night, I'm going to miss because, of course, we have a board meeting, but there's an opening lunch on Tuesday. On Wednesday and Thursday, I'll be talking to groups of who have already pre-signed up to come to Carrboro and hear the Carrboro story, and I think they'll be doing some kind of a it's kind of a scavenger hunt of sorts, an online type scavenger hunt in Carrboro in the afternoons on Wednesday and Thursday, and then it'll culminate on Thursday night with another gathering. There's a market show place where they'll learn about in more detail about the county. I think it's just going to be a great event and hopefully a great boost for tourism and to help our businesses. And I think it's supposed to be good weather.
It's going to be really good weather all week. Speaking with Lydia Lavelle, mayor of Carrboro, how big is tourism for Carrboro? I know we got one hotel already, a second one coming, so it's bigger now than it was before.
Tourism is huge, Aaron, particularly because when you look at our tax base, this is a methodical way that we have worked to try to increase revenue in the town, you know, not just to kind of try to take the burden off of our residents in the town, but to help our local businesses. You know, we bring in tourism. Those are people that come to town, you know, go out to eat, go out and shop in our shops, and then they kind of leave and go home. And so they spend their money here, and really it helps. That's really what has helped our sales tax increase. I can't remember if I said this during our talk last week, but we've had almost a $1 million increase over the last 8 or 9 years of sales tax. And I think it's because of this methodical approach we've taken to try to bringing visitors to downtown, bringing festivals downtown, bringing road races to town, because that in turn then gives business to our local businesses so that then they can see their profit.
North American Travel Journalists Association is coming to town. If you're just joining us, natja.org, if you want more information about them or about the conference, NATJA. Speaking with Carrboro Mayor Lydia Lavelle, so what is your specific role going to be with this? Are you leading tours? Are you talking with them at all?
Yeah, I am. I am the point person for the town, the spokesperson for the town. I'm going to make myself readily available for whenever anyone wants to interview me, or I may take them to some businesses or take them to organizations that they want to learn more about.
We're not going to take them to the board meeting on Tuesday night, right?
They can come if they wanted to, but I think they're going to be partying and having a better time than we are. But in particular, I know that I am asked to give remarks at the luncheon on Tuesday, at the dinner on Thursday, and then on Wednesday and Thursday, I am spending an hour with at least 12 journalists talking to them about the story of Carborough and answering any questions they have.
And it really is going to be a fascinating story that we're going to be telling all of these dozens and dozens of journalists that are coming in from around the country. I want to go back to something you said earlier, which is the courting process for bringing the conference in was done in the context of HB2. And I remember last year, this was a really big deal because HB2 passed and they were thinking about pulling out because of it and then decided kind of last minute, no, we're gonna stick it out. So the impression that I got last year was that they had already decided to come and then HB2 happened and they thought about pulling out. But the way you're describing it, it sounded more like the conflict between Chapel Hill Carborough and the state was actually one of the attractions for them.
Yeah, my memory is it was during the courting process mm-hmm. because somehow I can remember at least one meeting where it was, they really want to come, we really want them to come, but they're concerned about HB2.
Yeah.
So yeah, I can't remember the exact timing of it, but I do know that they said they wanted to meet with the gay mayor. So I met with them and really reassured them that, you know, we wanted them to come despite HB2 and that, you know, we had a story to tell and that not all of North Carolina. And honestly, it's I don't want to, you know, paint the whole state with this pro HB2 brush, mm-hmm. but that certainly in our county, based on our, you know, voting records and voting history and you know, support, you know, or voting against Amendment 1, for example, that we knew that our county was one that they would be they would love to come and visit.
Do they actually describe it as we want to talk to the gay mayor?
Because this is what I heard.
Okay.
What I heard was they want to talk to the officials.
Yeah.
You know, it's fine with me.
Yeah.
You know, if it means bringing more people to our town and
that's
to
true.
See our story and to visit our shops and restaurants, I'm all for it.
Well, speaking with Carborough Mayor Lydia Lavelle, who is not only the gay mayor of Carborough but also a professor at NC Central. So let's turn to the other big issue that we're facing here locally, which is the Board of Governors' proposal to kind of gut the UNC Civil Rights Center, which also affects NC Central Law School as well. Carborough Board of Aldermen, Orange County Board of Commissioners, Chapel Hill Town Council, all passing resolutions against the proposal in favor of the center, public hearing, and a demonstration this week where a lot of people are speaking out. What do people need to know about the work that these organizations do that are sort of under siege?
Well, I thought, you know, there were several great points made during the hearing yesterday. One in particular is just the wordsmithing of the policy. And, you know, it purports to, well, I don't want to say purports, it proposes to disallow litigation in centers and institutes at the law school, at the law schools. It's phrased more broadly, but when it's narrowed down, you're basically talking about UNC and Central.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, part of the discussion was, first of all, this idea that what an institute does is sometimes not much different from what the clinics do, okay? And so even though it doesn't say the word clinic, what a clinic does is represent people in litigation. Several of our clinics exist because they are in opposition with the state or with the federal government. You know, our person in charge of our trademark clinic, our person in charge of who oversees our veterans law clinic, our person who talks about our partnership with the public defender's office. I mean, all of those, by nature, result in litigation against a governmental branch. We also have a low-income taxpayer clinic that, interestingly enough, is funded by the IRS through a grant to our law school to almost serve as a watchdog to ask for litigation against the IRS. So some of the reasons that are given for apparently from the board for disallowing litigation by the Center for Civil Rights, you know, some of those reasons could be equally applied to some of our clinics. And so we really wanted to make that point that it's very malleable when you kind of look at what those groups do. So that's a concern. Those are concerns that we raised from the North Carolina Central University School of Law viewpoint, which I think were really well founded. That in and of itself, we do have actually one group that is labeled as an institute, and so that could perhaps be under threat, just like the Center for Civil Rights.
What's that institute?
It's the one that most specifically goes toward trademarks,
mm-hmm.
and so again, it's one. And I think the other point, gosh, there were so many good points made yesterday, but what is litigation? you know,
yeah.
because as Mark Dorson pointed out, you know, a little over half of the, say, potential suits that the center could get involved with settle, you know. And so that's part of a law student's training, right, is to learn how to have those early discussions, learn how to file those preliminary motions, learn how to do some introductory discovery and discussion, and at some point, and this is true in the civil litigation system, that many, many, many cases settle before
Most cases, you have trial, or litigate,
or have a result, or have damages, or whatever. So anyway, I just think there were so many good points that were made yesterday, and to not hear any of the competing points is, you know, that's something that I observed, is that, you know, our best public hearings, I feel, are where we have viewpoints on both sides of really well-grounded facts and articulated arguments. And those are the hardest decisions for decision makers to make, right? When you have really good points on both sides and you can see both sides and we're going to go with A instead of B. And that was, in my view, certainly missing from yesterday's experience. Maybe we'll see it if it continues.
So speaking about the hearing yesterday, it was pretty universally against the proposal in favor of the center?
Yeah, no, there was not a single speaker that was for the proposal.
There were 8 members, is that right, of the Board of Governors that were there? That's what I heard. What did they respond at all? What was your impression?
They did not respond at all. The chair of this committee, At the outset, as I suspected was appropriate, you know, explained that it was an opportunity for them to hear, mm-hmm. that they would not be asking questions, that they would be listening attentively, that they would be taking notes, and that, of course, the time frame had already been, you know, pre-allocated between UNC and then Central and then 2 minutes per speaker for the remaining speakers, and that it would roughly run about 2 hours, and that's about what mm-hmm. it did.
So go back to the clinics, because this is something that I probably should know more about that NC Central has. How big are they in terms of the number of people that get served? And is it just like people come to the clinics at NC Central and they can just get legal help if they need it?
Yeah, we have several clinics. We also have like a children's law clinic, a juvenile justice clinic. We have a domestic violence clinic. The way it works generally is through referral by legal services, by legal aid. Okay, so for most of those clinics. And I think the patent and trademark model is being set up differently with law firms that are performing pro bono work for entrepreneurs that may not have the money they need to get off the ground. Okay, so that's kind of a little bit of a different model. But most of these others, the referrals are made through legal services because part of the intention of clinics is to provide a practical experience for attorneys, but it's also to not take business from the for-profit bar, if you will. So that's kind of part of the regulations, I believe, the American Bar Association kind of prescribes that you have to offer clinics under. We have lots of clinics. They are, I know, limited in the number of students that can take a clinic. I don't know the number, but my guess would probably be like 12 per clinic or something. And the reason for that is because, you know, you have to have a supervising attorney that really is like very hands-on with the student. Students usually practicing under like the third year practice role, or even if they're a second year student, it means that the attorney is really the one kind of signing the papers and kind of reviewing it and everything. So it's so hands-on of a clinical experience that it's a somewhat small number that is at each clinic. And again, that number might be wrong, but I know it's no more than 20. You know, it's something like that. Mm. The other interesting point that it kind of be aware of is that this year, the American Bar Association has now instituted a requirement for all incoming law students to have up to 6 hours of experiential learning. And so what that means is, where before we may have had, we always have a great number of students that want to take our clinics, one of our clinical courses. But now, because it's required, we'll have, you know, even more students that will want to get involved in that clinical exercise. And as was pointed out yesterday, a lot of schools had to go about setting up extra kind
right,
of opportunities
right.
where we already had a lot of opportunities there, but it has caused us to have to kind of step back and think through, okay, now if so many students are going to be taking this, do we need to add on extra sections? You know, do we need to look at other courses we have that maybe could meet this experiential requirement with a little bit of tweaking? But I think it underscores the ABA's growing kind of awareness of how important it is for law students to have practical experience before they get out there and hang up their shingle.
And that's true of any job, right? I mean, the vast majority of what you learn, like people come to me and they say, oh, what's your background in journalism? Did you go to J school? I'm like, never took a journalism class in my life. Everything I learned on the job. And it's the same thing with any profession, especially a sort of a high-skilled profession like practicing law. What you learn in law school is such a small percentage of what you actually do on a day-to-day basis. You learn so much on the job. And we talk about the Center for Civil Rights and the institutes at Central and the clinics, and we talk about it in the context of, well, we need to have some agency that's there to protect and defend and represent people who are having their civil rights violated or threatened. It's important for that. It's important for just law students in general to be instilled with the idea that civil rights are important and need to be defended whenever they go out into the legal profession, whatever it is they end up doing. It's good to have that instilled. But just in general, like, you need to have that experience of practicing law in order to get out into the legal field. And this is something that the center does that's extremely important.
No, exactly. You're exactly right. And we heard from representatives from the Orange County District Attorney's Office, as well as the Orange County, Orange County Public Defender's Office, that students who do get this kind of experience in school, whether it's through the center or our clinics or externships or internships or whatever, I mean, they already are light years ahead of many other applicants that apply for those jobs. And, you know, we've seen that actually for many years with our students that have gone through our clinical programs, that often they get hired ahead of students from, you know, other schools that have very, very good reputations, but maybe they've never even seen what a complaint looks like before. And it's, you know, it is obviously something that other students can pick up in their early years of practice, but, you know, it's another, tool in the toolbox for students to have when they go out and they can be somewhat practice ready.
Speaking with Carrboro Mayor Lydia Lavelle. Mayor, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back with more here on the Aaron Keck Show after this.